In her new biography, Elizabeth Warren, Her Fight, Her Work, Her Life, bestselling author Antonia Felix carries readers from Warren's roots in Norman, Oklahoma, to her career as one of the nation's most distinguished legal scholars and experts on the economics of working Americans. Felix reveals how Warren brought her expertise to Washington and become a progressive politics leader in a deeply divided nation, weaving together never-before-told stories from those who have journeyed with Warren from Oklahoma to the halls of power in D.C. Again, the name of the book, Elizabeth Warren, Her Fight, Her Work, Her Life. And we welcome Antonia Felix to the roundtable this morning. Good morning. How are you?
Oh, good morning. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, it's a great pleasure to have you on. So what led you down the path of wanting to write a biography of Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts?
Well, I'm real interested in the stories of women who make it to powerful leadership positions because there are a lot of, you know, unique obstacles that they have to face. And when I first kind of became aware of Warren was back when she was running in 2011 for the Senate seat for Massachusetts, and she had that little speech on that YouTube video that went viral all over the place about you didn't become successful on your own. There's nobody in this country who got rich on his own. That speech, I thought, boy, that's a populist statement if I ever heard one. What is this woman all about? So it's been interesting to follow her career over those years and to have this opportunity to really delve in and talk to a lot of people about what makes her tick.
When you look at this story, the story that you tell, she has a rather scattered background politically when you look at her politics early in her life.
Right. I mean, I bet a lot of people don't realize she was at times Republican, independent, before she became a card-carrying Democrat. And I think it says a lot about who she is that as she evolved in her research about, as you said, you know, middle class economics and how the system works for working people in this country, her ideas evolved, her beliefs in what works in the system and what doesn't evolved. And all of that work on bankruptcy scholarship to dig it down into the nitty-gritty of what's really happening with that made her realize, yeah, free markets are great, capitalism is great, but it's got to have certain rules so that it's great for everybody. And that turned her into a Democrat.
Was there an aha moment or was it a gradual understanding?
It was a gradual understanding over those years of research where it just became obvious. She published a lot and it started to become obvious and her leanings shifted. So I would say it was a bit more gradual over those many years of scholarship.
Tell us about her time in Oklahoma and the mark she made there and a little bit about her upbringing and how that formed the woman that we know now.
Well, she grew up in Norman, which is just south of Oklahoma City, and it's the home of University of Oklahoma. So it's a big college town, but a small working-class town as far as the non-college part of it went. And her dad was, you know, working class, and her mom was a stay-at-home mom. And they moved to Oklahoma City when she started high school, and she started really young because she skipped some school. She was pretty bright. And in high school there at Northwest Clawson High School in Oklahoma City, she already made her mark as somebody who could probably do something in the world, do something with her life, because she was a star debater. In her senior year, she and her partner won a national meet and had a lot of trophies piled up in the lobby of the high school. So that earned her a full scholarship, a debate scholarship to go to college in Washington, D.C., and she dropped out of college after a couple of years because she got married and decided to go down that road. But, boy, it never left her, this feeling that there's something that she wants to do in this world. And she finished her degree at night school and then went on to law school and began that career as a bankruptcy scholar and a teacher. She really loved teaching law.
What was the, at that point, what was the career goal? What did she see herself doing?
Well, she had gained so much prominence as one of these experts on bankruptcy law and commercial law, and was really the go-to person for that, and would have been happy. I mean, she's winning awards as a professor, and she's speaking all over the country about the intricacies of bankruptcy and what's happening in middle-class economics and things like that. So it was a very fulfilling, rewarding career, and not a lot of women in the profession of teaching law on law faculties. Is getting better, but still it's quite an accomplishment. And as one of the stars in that area, the government people took notice and started asking for her input on things like the Bankruptcy Review Commission. Once she got a taste of what it's like to actually put that kind of scholarship into practice, that was a new turn in her life that, boy, what I'm doing and what I've learned can actually do something for, the government and for policy making. That's an exciting thing for a scholar to learn, and she kind of took it from there.
What brought her to Massachusetts?
Harvard. They courted her for a while, and they wanted her to be on their law faculty. Of course, Harvard and Yale Law are always in the top two of the law schools in the country, so that's pretty much the pinnacle. If you're a law professor, you get to be on the faculty at Harvard. You've made it. But her husband, Dr. Mann, is a law professor as well, and they were both teaching at University of Pennsylvania Law School at the time, and she didn't want to go to Harvard without her husband, and so she waited until she did start a law. They ultimately hired him too, but she waited a while, but then she got her full-time faculty position at Harvard,
which of course is a obviously it not only is it great for her profession, but it also puts her on the map where people start to know who she is, right? I mean, it helps in getting the name recognition that would ultimately help her in winning a Senate seat.
You're absolutely right. I mean, look at how many people in the media, of course, but also in the government, when they want to find somebody with expertise in a certain area, if they want to find somebody who really knows bankruptcy inside and out and who knows commercial law inside and out, they go to places like Harvard to talk to those professors and to get their insights and input. So that started it all when she got on that Bankruptcy Review Commission back in 1995. People in the government started to notice her, and of course that led later on to being the head of that congressional oversight panel to be the watchdog for the bank bailouts.
What was her, was there a political awakening for her in the sense of that, and not only in engaging in somewhat from the outside in the political process of actually becoming a political leader?
Well, I think it's really that moment when she was tapped to be first on that Bankruptcy Review Commission and realized, I have something to offer an even broader audience, an even broader part of the country by putting this into practice and helping policy get revamped and making something really happen in the real world with what I know. That was an awakening for her. And, of course, for an academic to cross that line into politics is, boy, that is a big, wide line that takes a lot of decision-making because as a scholar, you're neutral. You're not part of a political identity. You're just part of good scientific research. And but she really was gratified by being able to put what she knew into practice.
You address, of course, the controversy over the question of her Native American ancestry, a fact that is regularly brought up by the president. I'm curious as to what started all of that and ultimately what you found the truth to be.
Well, what started it all was the fact why she claims this is that when she grew up, the story that she and her three older brothers heard from day one was how their parents got married. They didn't marry in a church with all their friends and relatives. They had to skip town and elope. because on her dad's side, his family did not want him to marry Pauline because everybody in the small town knew that she had Native American ancestry, and they didn't want him to marry into that family. So they had to elope. Growing up, that was the family story, and there were also tales about the ancestors who had Cherokee and Delaware blood. So that's what she grew up with, and she was always open about it. A lot of white people in Oklahoma have those same kind of stories. It's kind of a common thing if you're from Oklahoma. But during her Senate race in Massachusetts, her opponent Scott Brown made the claim that she had used that identity as a way to check some boxes and get minority status to get into college and get teaching jobs and things, and that was disproven myriad times and on many levels that she never did that. So that should have been quelled, but it's still coming up, and it's probably going to come up a lot more before November. But, you know, the fact that the president has decided to use the name Pocahontas as a racial slur, which is very derogatory and very insulting to all Native Americans in the country, is a sad thing. But then again, it's an opportunity for us to talk about race, and it's an opportunity for her to bring up the issues concerning the Native American community in this country whenever this slur does come up.
Well, the name of the book is Elizabeth Warren, Her Fight, Her Work, Her Life. Antonia Felix is the author, and the book is published by Source Books. Antonia, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. A delight to have you on the program. Have a great weekend.
Oh, thank you so much. It was really great to be here.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Elizabeth Warren, Her Fight, Her Work, Her Life. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.